The Lord be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Luke. When the days were completed for the purification, according to the law of Moses, Mary and Joseph took Jesus up to Jerusalem to present him to the Lord, just as it is written in the law of the Lord, every male that opens the womb shall be consecrated to the Lord, and to offer the sacrifice of a pair of turtle doves or two young pigeons, in accordance with the dictate and the law of the Lord. Now there was a man in Jerusalem whose name was Simeon. This man was righteous and devout, awaiting the consolation of Israel, and the Holy Spirit was upon him. It had been revealed to him by the Holy Spirit that he should not see death before he had seen the Christ of the Lord. He came in the Spirit into the temple, and when the parents brought in the child Jesus to perform the custom of the law in regard to him, he took him into his arms and blessed God, saying, Now, Master, you may let your servant go in peace according to your word, for my eyes have seen your salvation, which you prepared in the sight of all the peoples, a light for revelation to the Gentiles, and the glory of your people Israel. The child's father and mother were amazed at what was said about him. And Simeon blessed them and said to Mary his mother, Behold, this child is destined for the fall and rise of many in Israel, and to be a sign that will be contradicted. And you yourself a sword will pierce, so that the thoughts of many hearts may be revealed. There was also a prophetess, Anna, the daughter of Phanuel of the tribe of Asher. She was advanced in years, having lived 7 years with her husband after her marriage, and then as a widow until she was 84. She never left the temple, but worshipped night and day with fasting and prayer. And coming forward at that very time, she gave thanks to God and spoke about the child to all who are awaiting the redemption of Israel. When they had fulfilled all the prescriptions of the law of the Lord, they returned to Galilee to their own town of Nazareth. The child grew and became strong, filled with wisdom, and the favor of God was upon him. The Gospel of the Lord. Good morning to everybody. And happy Feast of the Presentation. I'm suspecting that the Feast of the Presentation is one of those feasts that's a little bit mysterious. We know more or less Jesus was presented in the temple, and that's as far as we get with him. It's like, have you ever really thought, okay, why is it a big deal? What does it mean? Why do we have a big celebration? It's actually such a big celebration that when I was studying in Rome, one of the most beautiful masses of the year, by the way, if you live in Rome and you have access to the Vatican, is the Vigil Mass for the Feast of the Presentation. And it's the Mass that is dedicated especially to all of the religious orders, all the religious priests and monks and nuns and consecrated souls in the church. And the church will start out dark and everyone gets a candle, kind of like at Easter, and you have this lighted candle in St. Peter's, which is spectacular, and then, you know, the Mass continues. And it's really a very beautiful moment. So what's happening here is, well, I think to get the Feast of the Presentation, we have to understand a couple of things. In the Bible, we hear about the sacrifice, the offering of the first fruits, and then we hear about a lot about circumcision, okay? So what is the deal with the first fruits? Well, think about the fact that when you live in any relatively primitive agricultural country, you know, if you're waiting for crops, and especially if you're living in a desert area where things are not automatically given to you, they didn't have like the Nile River. The Jordan River is nothing at all like the Nile. And most of the country is relatively desert. So if you didn't have immediate access to a lot of water and you're dependent on rain and you know, you're just trying to get by from 1 year to the next, by the time you get your first harvest, you may be running scarce on food and supplies and everything, and this is what you make your livelihood on. And God, you know, after you've worked an entire year, for more or less, to plant and to prepare and then finally to harvest. And the big moment comes when you get your first harvest and God says, offer it up, burn it, give it to me. That's what the first fruits was. And God would demand that. That goes all the way back to the very beginning, Cain and Abel. You know, Abel was the one who offered up the first fruits of his harvest to God as a sacrifice, saying that, God, you are in first place. You're saying, you are more important than anything else in my life. I give the very best of myself to you. I give the best of all my labor to you. You are in first place. And implied in that is the idea that also, Lord, I trust in you. I trust that when I give you the very best, even when it implies a big sacrifice on my part, even when humanly speaking you would say, well, there's a level of uncertainty because you don't know how much harvest, what the rest of the harvest is going to look like this year. You could get locusts, you could get any number of things, you could get drought, all kinds of things could affect it, right? But you're saying, God, no matter what the circumstances are, I'm going to give you the first and I'm going to give you the best, and I trust that you will take care of the rest. There's an amazing, there's a beauty to that. Secondly, so, well, in any case, this also applied to humanity. In the Jewish covenant, with Passover, and from that moment onward, ever since the Feast of Passover, when the Jewish people were escaped from Egypt and entered into this covenant with God, God also applied that rule of the first fruits to us. He says, the firstborn son belongs to me. Actually, the firstborn of every animal belongs to me. And it says, you will offer up a sacrifice for the firstborn of every animal to, in a certain sense, buy it back. It was a symbolic sacrifice. It's not like God was demanding something really onerous. In the case of Jesus with two pigeons, you know, not particularly expensive, they bought back their son from God. But it was the idea that everything that is created belongs to me and it is a gift from me to you, and therefore it's not just something you can, you know, everything in the end refers back to me as God, okay? So the sacrifice of the firstborn in the law was, if you don't buy it back in a certain, then with the animals at least, then kill it, okay? Obviously we're not going to kill our own human offspring, but that was the idea. And when we bought back our firstborn with this symbolic sacrifice, if you're poor, with if you have any money, then with a lamb, but if you're poor and can't afford that, then a pair of pigeons or turtle doves. Now you can enter into the covenant. And this is the second thing, is the circumcision. For the Jewish people, circumcision is rather like baptism for us, okay? A circumcision was the means by which the male children would continue the covenant. The covenant means that you are entering into, you're becoming family, and you're becoming family with God. You're becoming children of God. And therefore, this is how, for the Jewish people, the transmission of God's favor over them as a people would go from generation to generation through this covenant. And the covenant always implies a shedding of blood. Again, even if it's only symbolic, in the circumcision, there's a certain shedding of blood. Not a huge amount, but it's there. So this is what, when Jesus enters into the temple, all of those things that were symbolized and all of these things that these rites were meant to bring about, now all of a sudden, somebody who is the Son of God himself and full and perfect human being, the perfect offering to God the Father, is being made, and he's being bought back for humanity so that as a gift to us. And God is allowing all of humanity through this presentation, in a sense, to enter into that covenant with himself, into the covenant of his life. So that's kind of the whole symbolism behind the presentation. Now, why do we have that mass that represents the religious orders? Well, when you enter into a religious order, like myself, okay, I'm not a diocesan priest, I'm a legionary of Christ, I have vows of poverty, chastity, and obedience, I'm in a religious order. If you want, you can look at me and say, you're like a male nun. I also happen to be a priest, though, on top of that. So, you know, I got a twofer. Okay? When you enter into religious life, you have consecrated your life to God. And in a certain sense, it's like God is saying, I have chosen this one here. This one belongs to me, but through the sacrifice of our life, kind of that slow burning out of our life, like a candle burns itself down, we are offered back on behalf of humanity to pray, to intercede, to do works of mercy, on behalf of humanity, to be instruments before God for humanity. And this is also, this is what Jesus' life really came down to. The only reason that Jesus came into the world in the first place was he was offered up for us, to God, in order to please God, to finally offer up a perfect human being after Adam and Eve, we kept messing up. But it's really, more than anything, God's gift to us so that we can receive the gifts and the graces that we need to go to heaven. So, time being short, I'm going to cut it short right here. Anyway, happy Feast of the Presentation to all of you, and I would recommend, and this is not a plug for myself, but you know, if you know any nuns or religious or anything out there, say a prayer for us. And if you know them personally and have any contact, do something nice for your religious people today. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit.